You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today, we've got a very fun one for you because Scott is literally sitting across the desk from me right now. Hey, Scott.
Hey, what's going on?
Scott has some business to do here in Toronto. Scott and I have some business to do here in Toronto. And we thought, like, why don't you come over for a day? And well, last night we had a little Syntax meetup, which was really cool. We had like a day's notice on a Tuesday night, and we had like 15 people come on out to a bar here in Hamilton. It was super fun to meet everybody.
Yeah, a lot of amazing people showed up. It was a great time. Yeah, it's just super, super good, especially for, like you said, short notice. The weather wasn't great either. Yeah. So yeah, shout out to everybody who came out.
Yeah, that was super fun. And then it's also your birthday today, so happy birthday.
Hey, yeah, turning 37, getting it going. Feeling some way about it, but you know, that's how it is. Yeah.
We're sponsored today by Sentry. Sentry is the error exception performance replay cron monitoring amazing company that figures out what's going wrong with your application. So you put Sentry into your front end, you can put it in your back end. They support literally every language out there, and also like every framework almost. They have an integration. They have an integration for Remix. The other day I was building a Remix website and I was like, oh, I wonder if there's a Remix specific implementation rather than just a React one or just a JavaScript one. And they do. They make it easy for all that type of stuff. So you're going to want to throw this into your application at sentry.io. Check it out. Use coupon code TASTYTREAT for 2 months for free.
Sick.
We're in person. We should do something that's kind of interesting here. So we thought, let's talk about our hopes and dreams and brainstorming for a new Syntax website, because there is a lot that could be added to the Syntax website. I think there's a lot that could be make the show better in terms of like providing supplementary info and searchability and transcripts and all that. So we're going to kind of go through the different areas of the website that we'd like to improve and just talk about like what would be wicked as a standalone podcast website. Cause like, I don't know. Have you ever seen like a really good podcast website? I don't think I have.
I've been thinking about this as a single podcast. No, because yeah, Everybody's using another service or something. Right. Yeah. But I've thought about, put my brain a lot on like even podcast networks and other companies that are doing this well. And like, what are those things? But at the end of the day, I think we're uniquely positioned to be able to both think about what are these idealistic ways that this experience could be and then execute on it. Because most normal podcasters are going to be like, oh, I'd really love to have this. And yeah, if the service they're subscribing to doesn't support it, they're pooched. They don't have that opportunity. So I think we're uniquely positioned, and this is actually really fun to give people some insight. Wes and I have not talked a ton about this beforehand, so this is going to be a true kind of brainstorming session in that sort of way, where we both probably had this on our brains for a bit, and now we get to dump all of that out.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into the first thing, which is the homepage design. It's kind of funny that the Syntax homepage we built it in like, I don't know, a couple days, 5 years ago. And the number of podcasts has grown to almost 600 now. And that is, we don't have any pagination or anything like that. It's simply just a long scrolling list of podcasts, which is okay because there is like a position sticky, and it's kind of nice that you can just search the whole page without doing anything. But it would be nice to probably paginate those. I don't know if infinite scrolling would make a whole lot of sense, but I think a lot of the stuff we'll talk about in just a sec, which is like surfacing good older content, will probably solve those as well.
Yeah, and I think that will be part of the challenge, right? Because we do just have a giant list of nearly 600 episodes, and that has pros and cons, but when you move away from that big old list, you're going to lose the command F ability or things like that, so you're going to have to replace those experiences with better ones, not worse ones, which too oftentimes I think, especially websites that do that type of thing, can replace those experiences with worse ones. When you do command F and some native find experience comes up and it's not nearly as good as giving you the quick find or anything like that. So as long as we can make that happen. And I do want to say, Wes, that you said that this thing just like popped up, and sincerely, we talked about making the podcast. It was like almost like overnight. You had the logo and the website, and you're just like, here it is. And I was just like shocked at how fast you put this together initially.
Yeah, because we just banged it up, and like we're like, let's go. You know, like we had a couple recorded, and it kind of needed to go out. And obviously, we've added features and fixed stuff over the years, but it's primarily still the same Next.js application that it was many, many moons ago. And it served us pretty well. And it's kind of cool because it's open source. So we've had people contribute, like somebody contributed scrubbing on the player a while back, which was really nice. Someone contributed, like when you hover over the player, it will tell you like where you're scrubbing to, like 6 minutes and 80 seconds. Which buttons are you talking about?
The Spotify button.
Oh, that was me.
You added that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because those weren't there originally.
They were.
Or, I mean, some of them weren't.
No, since Spotify was not a thing when we started, which is kind of interesting. That's why it's at the end of the list. And, like, I'm looking at it now, like, does anybody use Stitcher anymore? You know, and, like, we can tell from our stats that not a lot of people use iTunes anymore to listen to podcasts. Overcast is definitely still up there, but Spotify is definitely taking over the podcast scene.
Yeah, totally. The potluck question button. Oh, yeah. We added the links to, you know, learning about sponsorship and those types of things. Even initially, it was just like a big old listing. But hey, everything that has been added to it has been useful.
Totally. I would love to get that, like, potluck off of Google Forms. Mm-hmm. Whenever you get a Google Form, you're like, a Google Form is like a failure of the system in that somebody had to go around their infrastructure just to get something done. Like, a Google Form is great for that, but I feel like we should be able to. We're developers. We can, and that's kind of the exciting thing about this, is we can literally make anything we want.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can make it look and feel like how we want, which is a big deal. We're not, you know, beholden to the whims of our host for this.
User features. This is actually, somebody made a syntax Chrome extension, which will log which ones you have listened to. So it would be nice to have some sort of login or some local, probably login would be good because local storage, you would lose that. But it would be nice to log which ones you have listened to and which ones you haven't, because then you can go, like, essentially, like, ideally, the new website could be an app.
Yeah, people do listen to the podcast on the website.
Quite a bit.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yeah, I know. I do. I always go to, you know, Pocket Cast myself. But it's definitely a thing. And it could be, like you said, it could be an app. And in that way, people could just have everything that they would possibly want there. And if we're talking login, I think about this all the time. How would you handle the login given, you know, freedom to do it anyway? Would you just have email based? Would you have magic link based? Would you have GitHub login? Like, in your ideal circumstance, how would you have login? Because it's a big question.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do any OAuth stuff like that because it's such a pain to get into. And, like, I don't know. Every time I log in with GitHub, I like it for, like, my hosting provider. But every time I do it with other ones, I'm like, should I really be logging with? I know that it's locked down and they only get my email. I don't know. Maybe the listener would tell us. What do you think? Should it be logging with GitHub?
I don't know. Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about that as well. Like, me personally, given the opportunity, I always choose to log in with my email and a password for any given site.
Yeah.
Because that just kind of, like, locks it away. But that's also because I use 1Password. If I didn't use 1Password, I probably wouldn't feel that way. I'd probably be annoyed that I had to enter a password for this website.
I like the magic link along with username and password. And I get annoyed when you log in and it has to email you a code because, like, it takes a second to email it, and then you got to wait for your, like, I use Missive on the desktop and it only refreshes every, I don't know, 10 seconds or so. So you got to sit there and wait, and it's like it's half a minute to log in, whereas, like,
context switching.
Yeah. Next, I just want to go quick.
Folks like us, we've already moved on to something else.
Yeah. So, I don't know, something would be interesting there to log what people are listening to and for people to be able to track it. Like, this is what I do with my own course platform. So you could certainly do something similar to that. Search would be really cool. Right now, we don't have search at all. There was an effort early on to implement Algolia, and I think that would probably be worth revisiting once we do this type of thing. But I think even breaking it up a little bit further, which is not just searching the show notes, because that's what I do. Everyone says, what was the episode you talked about X, Y, and Z on? And what I do is I just go to Google, I type in what I think we talked about, and then I do cite colon syntax.fm and I find it. And I, that's fine because I know exactly like the words that would have been used in that one. And I can usually find it and send the person the link. But a really good search would be nice for people to find rather than just text-based search, right? Like if you spell one word wrong and you can't find it.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about search. You know, the SvelteKit docs have really great search. And I did some research into what they were doing, and there is like a open source thing that they're using for search. I'm trying to find it right now, but and it's really good. So I'm wondering if like that's the type of thing, that's the type of route we go, where it does kind of feel like that same type of Algolia experience, but you're not, you know, you're not with a service.
The docs from Veet have really good search.
What I wonder if they use the same thing, Flex Search.
No, they're using Algolia.
Okay.
There was another one that was using like an open source. It looked like Algolia, but it was like its own thing.
Yeah, here's this one. It's Flex Search. It is next generation full text search for browser and Node.js. And this is what the SvelteKit site's using. And in my experience, it's really good.
And is that... Oh, so you can index things. For some reason, I thought it was just like only static.
And but there's contextual search. There's some interesting stuff here.
So where does the data get stored when it indexes the values?
I haven't done any research into this beyond just looking at the GitHub page. Let's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool to dip into, because I also think that it could be taken a step further and you could somehow parse the show notes into links, guests, topics, like there's many pieces of data that are associated with it, right? And if someone wants to say, like, I'm looking for a sick pic, that was the egg thing, you know, then they could just do a quick search, or like, who was talking about converting web components to React? You know, like, it'd be so nice to be able to surface that stuff a lot easier.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, and that even gets into like things like filtering within your search too, right? Like, are you searching by what? And, you know, am I filtering? Am I trying to find a specific guest, a specific timeline, a specific topic? Give me all of the shows on React from the last year, you know.
And type of show as well, like a hasty, a tasty, or a guest, or like some sort of like special, like a live one. Because sometimes people are like, okay, well, I got 15 minutes right now. I want to listen to a syntax. What can I listen to?
Yeah. Give me every episode that's under 20 minutes long.
That'd be really cool. Or you could like, maybe like even like a playlist. Like you could add things to your playlist if you're signed in. Because I'm thinking like if we have like an app per se, like if we wrap it in something, then you could store a list of, I guess this would work from the browser as well, because you can play an MP3 from the browser and then close the browser and the MP3 keeps playing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot there. You know who has really great searches, or at least great filtering? They don't have great search, but great filtering is Peloton has really great filtering. I think about that all the time. Like when I'm using an app and I come across either like a really nice filtering or a really nice search, I'm either, I don't know if you do this, but I'm always taking screenshots of apps on my phone when I'm using them. I'm like, oh, this is so good. Let me take a screenshot. Yeah. Like I'm going to look at it later or something. It's like they just end up in my photos. And I never ever look at them again.
Next one we have here is transcripts. So this is actually something I took a stab at, like, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago. I reverse engineered the otter.ai API. Because they didn't have an API available to you. And if we were going to do this type of thing, it would have to be automated. So I basically just reverse engineered their API for the browser-based UI. And it worked pretty good. And I think since then, transcribing audio into text has gotten way even better than that. It's to a point where it's just like super good. So I think having transcripts on the show would be really cool. And then also, like, I even went as far as, like, as the syntax audio player was playing, I was, like, highlighting the timestamp in the transcript as we were going through, and because you can match up the transcripts, have like, I don't know, from 6 seconds to 8 seconds, you know? So it'd be kind of cool to show that type of thing. I saw something the other day that says like 68% of Gen Zs watch TV with the captions on.
I do.
Blew my mind.
I'm not Gen
Really?
Z, and I do. Yeah. Yeah. We always have it on, especially because, well, it was much more important when the kids were younger and we didn't want to wake up our kids.
Oh, yeah.
So we'd have the TV on a little bit quieter and then just have the captions on. Some, you know, we kind of just leave them on now just because it reinforces kind of what you're hearing while you're reading it. Yeah.
My daughter always wants them on too. She, every time we're watching a show or a movie, she puts them on, and she's like grade two. She's just learning to read, but she likes having on. So maybe we need that.
Yeah.
Part of the design as well.
Yeah. I don't know if you've dove into Whisper at all, the open AI.
Yeah. I've looked at it.
So automatic speak recognition. Yeah.
So is that open? No, that's from OpenAI.
It's from OpenAI.
Not an open source company. I don't know why they have open in their name.
Open source AI, not open source. It'd be fun if that's what it was. Yeah. I don't know. I've thought about this a lot too. You know, it's definitely been a fault of the website for a long time. So something we're looking to quickly correct in the new site and have it be not just existing, because, you know, the easiest thing would just be to have transcripts existing, but I think we want to have it be a next level experience.
Yeah. There. Yeah. Like it's easy just to like dump it on there and be like, there, I did it. You know, there's your transcript.
Yeah.
But like, I think like you can like elevate it. There's something there. I'm curious, like, what does that cost? Like the price of this stuff has just coming down as well. I'm curious what the OpenAI Whisper is.
Yeah.
There's got to be like open source things in it as well.
Yeah.
You know what I learned the other day? You know FFmpeg?
Yes.
Shout out to Andy on TikTok. I'll find it. He showed that FFmpeg will automatically detect gaps in talking. And remember there was like a tool that you used that would like remove the gaps?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was just a UI for FFmpeg, because you parse it and it will tell you where the gaps are, and you can give it like min and max. So if we were talking and we stopped talking for 10 seconds, you could just run it through FFmpeg and it would detect the silence and remove it.
Yeah. Yeah. And shout out to Recut out there, because it is a really great experience to use that thing. Because what you can do, you just drop in your video, it detects the gaps, you click on the ones you want it to remove, and then it saves it almost instantly, or you can export it to Premiere, Final Cut, Resolve. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is one of those things that I wished any of my video editing apps had baked in forever, but the fact that it is just in that makes a lot of sense to me personally. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're gonna figure out what I think between the transcripts, and later on, I'm gonna talk about like deploying, maybe putting the MP3s in Git directly. I think that we could just automate all of that and just have it all ready to go. I love having it up on GitHub, because people submit pull requests all the time with clarifications or spelling mistakes or adding links or anything like that.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, what about like the player itself? You know, you mentioned, you know, potentially being able to integrate the transcripts with the player. I think there's a lot of like fun things we can do with the player itself.
No
because
kidding.
Players are, you know, they're very bare bones, but sometimes you do come across something that is thinking about it in a much more interesting way. And I think we have, again, like with everything else here, I think we have a unique opportunity to do some really fascinating things here. And both of us do have a lot of experience here, considering we, you know, we work on video platforms, we work on players. I've built a lot of player type of interfaces myself. I know you have as well. So like, what types of fun things could we do? You know, it's funny, initially my thoughts initially went straight to like, what kind of fun, playful, whimsical UI things could we do to this? I had a fun idea of like having a CD player, and like very on brand for us to have a CD player and a CD spinning. And a lot of these Zoomers will be like, what is that?
Yeah. I was also thinking, if you have transcripts, the transcripts knows who's talking when. So the player could show the waveforms of who's talking and then color code them. I've always liked the SoundCloud player where people comment at specific times. So like, wouldn't it be cool to add some sort of commenting system where people could tag it?
Or like emphasize specific times, like reactions to specific things?
Yeah.
That'd be like very, very TikTok to be able to just like press the heart button at certain spots or whatever.
Yeah. Like hit the heart button at a specific time. You could see where people are, or even like YouTube where people are scrubbing to a specific spot. You can see where they're scrubbing to. Being able to share a specific clip from the player. Like what if someone were to say, oh man, this two sentences Scott said about Svelte is really informative. So you could just like click and drag and then send that link to somebody and it would highlight it in the transcript, or maybe you could even like make a video with it, right? We talk, what's the React-based video player, that Remotion, right? You could literally give the person a, because every now and then somebody will say, oh, good point on the Syntax Podcast, and they will link, they'll share like a little video and it has what we're saying over top of it and all that stuff. And just like, wow, that would be cool to give that power to other people.
Yeah, right. What if somebody wants to clip one of us saying something about taking a big dump or singing Sloppy Joes or any of that stuff? Yeah. Yeah. And another thing is, you know, that goes along pretty significantly with filtering and search is tagging of episodes, right? Because that's not necessarily something I think either of us want to spend the time to do each time, right? Mm-hmm. Let's go in there and manually tag each episode. Granted, we could do that, but it does feel like the type of thing we could implement via let's have transcripts, right? And then let's take those transcripts and parse out looking for certain words, like which words are used the most frequently, and what is the relevance of those words to maybe the whole of the rest of the episode? So whether or not this is like using AI or whether or not this is just using, you know, deduction with code to say, all right, they've mentioned the word React 18 times in this episode. Very clearly React is in the title. Maybe perhaps this episode should be tagged with React, right? Automatically.
Yeah. I think it definitely has to be automatic. Like if there's anything I've learned from people's WordPress blogs is nobody takes any time to manage tagging or anything like that. So it would be really cool to have it automatic. And I think AI is probably that. I don't know how that works, but I'm assuming you could feed, maybe we have to train something based on all the existing. We might have to get the Syntax Army out, 600 of you to each take an episode and tag each one or something like that. But at a certain point, I think we could make that automatic.
I think you could do it automatic to a big degree, even without training in that kind of way. But I think it would be a fun problem to solve. I think that's the key to a lot of this stuff, is that every single one of these things feels like a fun problem to solve. Yeah. And it makes me want to start working on it already, right?
You know what we also need, once we have transcript, is a word cloud.
Yes.
Remember word clouds?
Classic word cloud, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What do you think our top word would be in syntax?
Specificity.
Specificity.
Got it. Nailed it.
I'm very curious what it would actually be. Somebody once parsed out every single syntax episode in Python and tallied up who talked more. And it was like 58% me, 42% you, something like that. Or it's slightly more in my direction. It'd be kind of cool to have stats on that type of stuff.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Because like, I don't know, if you're doing it, might as well like put some fun stuff into it.
Yeah, I hear you. What about, so video, this has been something that's on our brain for a long time. People have often, since the inception of Syntax, have been like, is there going to be a video podcast? Is a video is going to be involved in? For I think we resisted it for a long time, mostly because we wake up on Monday morning and we pull ourselves into the office and then we start recording. So I think video, it sometimes felt like maybe something that we couldn't do, or wouldn't be a smart idea for us to do. But I think, you know, integrating video into a podcast about coding feels like the thing that needs to happen, considering one, we both do a ton of video work outside of Syntax, and we both have a lot of experience there. But also, you know, I think it adds a different degree of it just that sense of community or sense of realness to the whole thing. You see a lot of podcasts now are straight video shows. It's almost like what's happened is we've taken the podcast format and it's evolved into like a talk show type of deal almost.
Yeah.
So it really feels like that's a direction we need to lean into, at least to some degree. And I've been thinking about maybe it's only even maybe the video component is the Tasty Treat episodes. Maybe the Tasty Treat episodes are the video episodes. We do them live on video. You know, we have them in the studio video type of deal. We can share screen. We can do those types of things and teach while we're doing the podcast. And then maybe we leave the Hasty Treats and the supper club, because I don't want to burden our guests to have to look presentable all the time. And maybe we do eventually, but
I think the big thing with video is that you can then get clips out of the podcast, because right now, like, we can't make a TikTok out of it, because there's not, like, we actually do record the video for every single one, but we don't do anything with it. But if we could repurpose that or cut it into clips or something like that, that would be really nice to be able to share it, because people have something to look at. And then someone messaged me the other day. They said, I just want to see what you're talking about on your screen. And I was like, oh, like I could have a monitor, and like whenever I want to throw something up, you just throw it on that screen. Like, you have a little Stream Deck or whatever. It would be nice.
Hey, Chris, throw that up on the screen right now. Those podcasts, I think. Throw that up.
Do a quick search of monkeys can write CSS.
I'm thinking about this video. Put it up on the screen right now. Yeah, let's get it.
Oh, that would be good. I think, like, I watch and listen to the WAN show from Linus Tech Tips, and I primarily listen to it on audio, but then the clips pop up on my YouTube every now and then, and it's funny because it's just them sitting in front of their laptops. It's not interesting at all. But the added context of how their hands are waving, and sometimes they can share their screen and looking at each other and whatnot, it really helps. So I think that they do a very good job at that.
But also from audience perspective, podcasts themselves is still pretty niche at the end of the day in terms of the amount of people listening to podcasts. Now, granted, a ton of people do listen to podcasts, but the amount of people who listen to YouTube is way more. They exist for longer. They are easier for somebody to just put on and watch. And I think you could end up having a much larger audience simply by having a video component that is good looking and on YouTube.
Totally. And it's like a whole nother audience of YouTube, TikTok,
even Flip-flop.
Clips on Twitter, things like that.
What about Show notes.
Timestamps. We just added clickable timestamps, which is great. Our editor, Chris, adds timestamps into the show notes, and they're clickable in your podcast player, but they were never clickable in the show notes. So
I love how you say "we" when it's something that you did.
Yeah, but I was just like, oh, yeah, that's an easy thing to do. So I just banged it out and added it. So there's that. But like, there's probably something else that could be added to it. Like, there's probably some interesting ways that you can overlay transcripts or clips or bookmarks or something into the actual show notes to make it like an immersive experience. I was just thinking, like, we just use straight Markdown right now. Is there anything that would benefit from using MDX inside of that thing? I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure either. MDX does feel like a great tech, but at the end of the day, there's something in me that like makes me feel like it's maybe not the thing to bet all of your horses on.
Oh, yeah. I use MDX on my blog, but I don't use... Do I use? I use like a YouTube component. And like I don't do so much that I would be locked into it like long-term for that type of stuff. Like, I could always just parse that type of stuff out. Yeah. So if we wanted to like embed stuff, I think that would be helpful, but you got to think, like, at the end of the day, it has to be parsed into static HTML, because I think most of the way a lot of people consume the show notes are via the podcast player, and you're not dropping a React component into your.
Oh, right. Yeah. That is a big concern right notes, there. Yeah. And you don't, the last thing you want to do is to split those two things, right? To where the website has a specific type of show notes, and the podcast itself has a specific type of show notes, because that just like with anything here that we're talking about, once you start to splinter the system into ways like that, or again, like with tagging, anytime you end up having to have that human intervention there, then the systems will just rot.
I think another interesting problem is how do you surface the good content? If you look at the stats, people do find the old good content, especially now that the Spotify, like I give Spotify a lot of crap for their podcast, but their search is so good. You just search for a specific topic that you're interested in, and it will show you podcasts that are related to that. And that didn't really exist before that. There was not like a good implementation of, I want to listen to podcasts about with this person. Like I want to listen to podcasts where Rich Harris has been on, or I want to listen to podcasts about this specific tech. And now you can do that type of thing. So I think we could go a step further and say like, okay, well here, like we've done all the fundamentals episodes. We have a lot of really popular episodes. We've done a lot of like game show episodes. So wouldn't it be cool to be able to somehow surface those so that someone says, all right, I'm going to go back and listen to all the fundamentals episodes at once. I think that's a pretty simple thing to fix.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I wonder a lot about the general way in which that exists. So the surfacing good content, we have our analytics through Libsyn is where we host the podcast. How much access do we have to that via API?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm assuming we can get it.
I'm assuming we can get it
We're likely going to be moving off of Libsyn anyway.
You think so?
Well, Chris, our editor is just cries because it's so painful to use and it's awful. And like the Libsyn, the stats from Spotify are like not being piped into our stats. And like I've been on so many support chats with them and it's just a garbage product overall. They like made Libsyn 5, like they just made a whole new version, but like it feels like there's like a lot better options out there. The one thing is like Libsyn is very cheap compared to a lot of the alternatives. I think like our podcast is like 30 or 40 bucks a month or something like that to host. So
we don't need a lot of the features that the other ones are giving you. The other ones are going to give you a website. They're going to give you those platforms.
Injecting ads. Yeah, you're right.
And we don't need that stuff, right? Yeah. So like having a bare bones setup. But at the same, I don't want to make Chris cry. I don't.
No.
But I do feel bad about what is the situation if we move it and something gets messed up with our trending or our position I feel like very concerned about
that's
that for some
that's
reason.
That's why I haven't moved it. It's like, I don't want to mess up a good thing, right? Like I don't want to move it. And then all of a sudden people get every podcast downloaded in their player because of the RSS feed. And I even thought about like, and it's not that complicated. Like you look at the RSS feed and you're like, I could generate this on my own, but it's really the stats and the like CDN caching and stuff like that, that is the benefit of the podcast platform.
Yeah. And so if that RSS feed like majorly changes for past episodes, how does Apple or like you said, how do they handle that?
I think you can make sure that it doesn't before you do it. Like you could just have it set up on both and run a diff on it and just really make sure. Like we're not the first people to ever move an RSS feed. And the nice thing about it is that I'm very glad I did this, is when we set up the podcast, I put the RSS feed on the Syntax domain. So everywhere the RSS feed is not like rss.libsyn.com, you know, like we're not locked into it. It's like using an email address from your ISP. It seems good at initially, but then you're locked in for life.
Yeah, I know. I think about everyone with at Comcast email address.
Yeah, I think some sort of collections episode.
Collections. Collections. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And the interface can surface that stuff in a really like nice way. You know, a lot of the things when I think about, you know, my brain immediately goes to like GUI aspects of it. Like, what are these fun but also meaningful ways that we can present this data, this massive collection of audio files that has a lot of good educational content that I think, you know, 500, 600 episodes where being able to access the stuff from the fundamentals episodes, all of the fundamentals episodes we did really, you know, easily and quickly, because it's not like we need to re-record those episodes just to resurface them. And sometimes people, what they do with podcasts is they'll just re-release I think about like, how did this get made as a podcast about movies? And that's what they've been doing, is all of their old episodes, they've just been releasing like one a week now as a matinee episode. It's like, okay, but I've already heard this. I don't want it to show up on my feed again. Yeah. There has to be a better way to surface that content than just to re-release it.
I freaking hate when like good podcasts you like start just republishing it. It makes sense because like a lot of people have joined since then, but like, like This American Life did that. I finally just unsubscribed because they would just, every time they published one, I'd be like, I've heard this. I've listened to the 11 years of backlog catalog, and now they only have a new one like once a year. Interaction would be kind of cool. I'm not sure what that looks like, but polls or something like that. I like the idea you said of hearts at a specific timestamp in the player, but some sort of like audience input would be neat.
Reactions, and we can do it all with emoji. You know, everybody loves emoji, so it's not like we have to get wacky with that. But there's a lot of like fun ideas for how we could express reactions to certain aspects of the site.
And now that we say that, now I'm going back to, oh, maybe it is a good idea to tie log into a GitHub account, because as soon as you let people vote or create or do anything, then you're people are going to spam it, create a whole bunch of accounts, you know, there's comments, things like that. But if you tie it to something that is hard to get or hard to get approved, like a GitHub account, then it's a bit easier. That's why people do that type of thing.
We've already kind of talked about
this. No, this is an interesting one that I have, is right now what happens is we write the show notes in Markdown, or our editor, Chris, does. He takes our like chicken scratch that we write down. It makes it into show notes and timestamps and everything like that. And then he publishes the Markdown to the Git repo, but then he has to like convert the Markdown to HTML and then copy paste that into Libsyn. And then if there's an error, we have to go to two spots and correct it, right? And if they're, it's kind of annoying. Like there's not a single source of truth for this type of thing. So I'm trying to think like, wouldn't it be cool if we use Git LFS, which is large file storage? I've never used that myself, but I was like, I want to put the MP3s on GitHub and be able to pass that into whatever's transcribing and be able to automatically push that to our podcast host. And then if there is an update to a specific show, then it will just automatically do a build and push it to our podcast host with any specific updates.
I think with all of this stuff, like kind of what we're getting at too in the process, the stuff that everyone else doesn't see is that the process could be tuned up to a way where we have a single source of truth for everything. And it just becomes easier for all of us to publish and to make changes and to make updates. I have never used Git LFS myself either, but the single source of truth thing, I think, is something that needs to happen. Definitely.
Yeah. It wouldn't be single source of truth for the MP3 because you would have to push it to the podcast host. But I guess you could say if the MP3 changes, which almost never happens, maybe once or twice, I don't even remember like what would have happened, but maybe we forgot something in and we had to edit it really quickly. But show notes, definitely. Show notes update, they're like a living thing. And it's kind of cool to be able to do that. Even like if people have suggestions for links, like people all the time, like, oh, you didn't mention X, Y, or Z. And I'm like, well, I never heard of that. You know, like it would be cool to add that to the show notes. So literally everybody else could get that benefit as well. So like user submitted links, and then you could just automatically update the show notes of the RSS feed.
Yeah. What about like the code base itself? We haven't really talked too much about, you know, the actual structure or the stuff that almost doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we would both be interested in writing it in Svelte or SvelteKit.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's been determined as like the direction, but I think it's most likely going to be the direction. Just, you know, honestly, I like working in it, and I know you do too.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where you'd make the decision, hey, it's a very good platform and it's something we like working in. And I feel very, I feel very comfortable working in SvelteKit. I've built my whole entire course platform on it, but I've learned a lot of patterns. I have a lot of established packages. I think this is the type of thing that it could just be, we could feel very productive in a system like this without having to worry too much about it.
Yeah, I agree as well. Like the other day I was submitting a pull request to this website that tests microphones. And it was SvelteKit. And like, I just forked it and edited it and went on my way. And I was like, this is very simple to find what you want and everything like that. I think it's just a, I think that would be a fun project to build it in SvelteKit.
How do you feel about TypeScript versus JS doc style typing? Because I've never really dove into the JS doc style typing.
Yeah.
But, you know, with anything that's not currently what I'm doing, it's a siren calling me to shore. Like, hey, maybe you should look at this JS doc style typing.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel.
It's okay. Like, I'll use it when, I'll especially use it when I'm jumping into a, like a JavaScript file, and I'm like, ah, there's no typings for this thing. So you can just pop a little comment above it and boom. Like for example, in my course platform, that's written in JavaScript, and the player is a Vimeo player, and all the methods are on the player, pause and play and scrub and change and all of, and I want all the IntelliSense for that. So just one quick little line, which will JS doc it, and then you get all the benefits of the auto completion. I probably would not want to use JS doc for a fresh project. I would go all in TypeScript. Yeah.
I do probably, it's like I said, sometimes I have a hard time with, is this just something that I want to do because I'm not doing it currently? Yeah. Or is it something that I actually want to do?
I always have to look up like what's the equivalent in TypeScript, you know? And like as far as I know, almost everything in TypeScript can be JS docked. Even like Satisfies is now in JS doc.
And it's not necessarily the other way around, because like you can type an entire function with JS doc without having to assign it to a variable.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of nice.
I saw another thing today that was, you can infer most types, but not all types. So you can infer like half the types and then define one specific type using the JS doc syntax, but I haven't really dove into that myself.
It's pretty cool. And the one thing I love about JS doc is that if you have a type that is a string or a number, something very basic, you can add a description to what that variable is. And then when you hover over top of it, it says, all right, you have like a get podcast, and then you pass it a number, right? And it's just a number. But if we were to hover over top of it, say like pass in a syntax show number that can be found via show.display number, you know, like it's just so nice to be able to have descriptions for that type of thing. And you can actually add that on top of TypeScript. So you can like mix and match JS doc and TypeScript if you want to add.
Not in a TypeScript file though.
Yeah. No.
In fact, because I subscribe to a GitHub issue that is on TypeScript, because I'm only thinking about this specifically because I got a ping about it today. Somebody had updated it, but it is the GitHub issue is the ability to use JS doc style syntax in a .ts file.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. For some reason, I thought you totally could do that. Must have been a JavaScript file. But yeah, adding descriptions to, like, I've even seen people, they basically just make a type of, like they say, type show number equals number. Like you're just aliasing number and giving it a descriptive name. A lot of people sort of turn their nose at that because you're not making a new type, but you're doing that so that you can have a little bit more context for that type of thing. But you can, if it's a function argument, you can just name the argument what you want. Yeah. So
it all depends, right? Yeah. Like, do we even need that at the end of the day?
Another one was, I was doing some mapping. In my TypeScript course, the tuples video, a tuple is a array with a fixed length where each item in the array is typed. And I was doing a lat long, like very common in mapping applications to use latitude, longitude in an array. And if you tuple a lat long, it's number, number. And like, how do you know if it's lat long or long lat? Because Google Maps uses lat long, and I think Mapbox uses long lat. Like they switch them, and it's so annoying. And if it's just number number, you literally have no idea which it is. So you can create what's called like a branded type, or you could do a branded type is essentially just creating an alias of that thing and adding a extra property.
And for a long time, the solution to that would have been just to, well, not for a long time, because this is not something we could do up until recently, but named parameters via having an object with named parameters, but that doesn't necessarily work in the tuple context.
Space, it doesn't work. No. Yeah, that's the annoying. Oh well, no, because tuples can be named. You're right. Tuples can be named, but they are not shown in the Atelier sense. I went down a rabbit hole of trying to get the, like, you hover over a variable that is of a type, and it did not tell you the names of the tuple. It's only when you're creating the type. So, anyways, it would be nice to have JS doc descriptions for variables.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I know. It's one of those things that, like I said, I look at it kind of longingly, and then, but I'm the meme of looking back at it.
Yeah. All right. I think that is it. If you, the listener, we would like to know, like, what do you want out of a website? What would you like to see? We've certainly got lots of requests for different things, but please let us know. Just tweet us at SyntaxFM. You can also just open an issue on the Syntax Git repo, because that's a good spot to sort of log and talk about specific things that we want.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, let us know what you think. What do you want to see out of the site? What kind of functionality is something that, you know, this site is something that always annoys you about our site? What's something that bugs you about it? I think this is the perfect opportunity to have those voices heard and understood, because this is the time that we're really looking at this thoughtfully. And what types of things would you like to see, even fun, whimsical things out of the site as well, too? Because we're about having fun here. I think that has been made fairly clear. So, yeah, that's all I have on this topic. I think we'll probably, you know, just like with anything, we'll be sitting in the middle of the night and be like, oh, I have this idea. So, yeah, let us know what you think. All right, let's get into the part of the show where we talk about sick picks, things that we pick that are sick, things that we enjoy, things that we like, things that we find to be really nice. I have a sick pick for you today, Wes. And this is something, you know, we have a sheepdog, and, you know, one thing that she loves to do is to get anxious when anybody leaves the house. And if we have our screen door out there, she will destroy our screen door. It's happened a couple of times now. In fact, our last house didn't even have screen doors, or else it would have happened many more times. So this house has, before we had lived here even a year, she had destroyed the screen door twice. So I got a dog door that my parents actually had for their dogs. And our dogs are still figuring it out. They're still like trying to understand that this thing even exists. But it's a really neat function. And what it is basically is a screen door dog door. And it's a, kind of a neat feature thing where it's basically just plastic and magnets. And because it's magnets, they can just push it open. It kind of automatically shuts itself. And the dogs can walk through the screen door. And luckily, that means hopefully if my dog is getting anxious about wanting to go outside and the screen door is there, she's not going to scratch at the screen door. And when she hits it, it's going to flap open or something, and she can walk through it. Now, again, we're still training them on it. It'll take a little bit of effort. But this thing was really easy to install. It's two pieces that are magnets. You clip them together through the screen door, and then you X-Acto knife the interior out of it. And then you clip in the little doggy door. And it was really easy to install. And since it's a screen door, you know, you're not making any long-term modifications to your house to have a dog door somewhere and like a real door. And like I said, I've had to replace the screen a couple times now. So I'm a pro at replacing the screen. So it's really easy to do. If you mess up, you can always just start over again or something like that. Granted, you'd have to put in a new screen. But hey, I found this thing to be really nice and worked really well for our dog. So check it out. It is a dog door, sliding screen door. They come in a few different sizes for based on what size of doggy you have.
Awesome. I am going to sick pick watch bands from AliExpress. So I've got the Apple Watch, and I decided I would like a couple different watch bands, you know, like a fancy one and a metal one. And
yeah, check out my watch band. It's the one that came with my watch.
Oh, yeah, the silicone one.
For like a billion years.
I've got the Velcro one, and I learned that it's not nice to shower with because it stays wet for very long. So I kind of want to get one of those as well. But the watch bands are like $2 or $3 shipped on AliExpress. And there's so many cool ones. Like I got my wife some really nice, like a leather wraparound one, like stylish ones. And she like changes it for going out on a date. She puts that on. If she's working out, she puts a different one on. And it's kind of cool to have a whole bunch of different watch bands available to you. And they're really not all that expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to get on this, me personally, because at the end of the day, the ones that you're buying from Amazon or from an Instagram ad.
They're probably all coming from AliExpress anyway. Yeah.
Right. And then they upcharge them like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's or they have like a pack. It's hard to buy like small items on Amazon because they put it in a pack of 100. Like, what did I buy the other day? That was, I had to like fill the hole in our sink. That was like, we changed our tap from one of those, had like two, like a hot and a cold and a tap. And I changed it to just like a single post that had everything on it. So we had these two holes. So I filled one with a soap hole dispenser and then I filled the other one. I was like, well, I've got nothing else for this one. So I went on Amazon. I found you can buy like a little chrome plug that you put in there, but they sell a pack of like eight. And I was like, who needs eight? So of course I bought the eight pack and now here I am trying to find family and friends. And luckily a couple of friends of mine needed them, but like
about the eight pack.
It's so wasteful, you know? I just want one.
Yeah. I know I need to look up what size, I don't know what size my watch is before I order any of these, but I have the normal sized watch.
There's like hundreds of different kinds available. Like you look at it, it's just a whole rabbit hole.
And it is. It's every single one that you see advertised to you on Instagram for $40 is here and it's 99 cents.
Yeah. shameless plugs, westboss.com/courses. Check it on out if you want to learn a thing or two about JavaScript.
Shamelessly plugging levelup.video. If you want to learn about JavaScript, CSS, Svelte, anything. Yeah. Levelup.video. Check it out.
Thanks everybody for tuning in. Catch you later.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.